Our guest is Samra Albayati. She's currently in her fourth year at Claremont School of Theology. She's pursuing a master's in divinity. Samra is best known for her percussion and vocal gifts. She's been performing with her family since the age of 12 in various venues, including peace events. She was the founding director of the International Drummers for Peace in Orange County. They had 20 drummers of all ages and ethnicities. And now she leads the Claremont School of Theology drumming group. Prior to entering seminary, Samra worked in the field of education, serving communities of underrepresented minorities. Her specialty lies in the area of special and gifted education, grant writing, teacher training. She holds a bachelor's in psychology and social behavior from the UC Irvine campus and a master's in education from Pepperdine. Her true love is for the orphans. In 2009, Samra started a nonprofit called Orphan Whispers to help orphans in various conflict and post-conflict societies, beginning with Iraq. The International Humanities Center is a 501c3 that helps grassroots organizations. It took notice, took Orphan Whispers under its wings in the year 2010, and now her nonprofit is stronger and more effective. Would you please welcome Samra Albayati?
Thank you. Good morning. Nice to be here. I think this is my first time at the Fullerton Church, so thank you for having me. I'm going to read a poem called God Has Pity on Kindergarten Children by Yehuda Amokai, an Israeli poet. God has pity on kindergarten children. He pities school children less. But adults, he pities not at all. He abandons them. And sometimes they have to crawl on all fours in the scorching sand to reach the dressing station, streaming with blood. But perhaps he will have pity on those who love truly and take care of them and shade them like a tree over the sleeper on the public bench. Perhaps even we will spend on them our last pennies of kindness inherited from mother, so that their own happiness will protect us now and on other days. Ahmed is an orphan in Iraq. He does not go to school. Instead, he roams the street during the day, trying to do whatever work he can. Sometimes he is able to make enough money selling gum and candy or carrying people's luggage near the border between Iraq and Syria. He lost his father when a bomb exploded on the streets of Baghdad. Some terrorist or the U.S. military, they never found out who was responsible. It was just another work day when Ahmed's father went off to work. Just another work day. His mother is still alive, though, and works as a seamstress. It's the only job she could get. She tries to teach Ahmed at night when they sit next to the oil lamp so that he will not be behind when he eventually returns to school. Ahmed is in kindergarten. And God has pity on kindergarten children. Layla is an orphan in Palestine. As a teenager, she had to stop going to school to get a job. Her mother could not feed her six siblings by herself. So Layla gave up her dreams to become a doctor. She wanted to help her people. They have seen so much pain. War has been all Layla has ever known in the West Bank. She remembers the day the bulldozer came. She remembers the day her father died because they could not get through the checkpoints fast enough to see a doctor. War and suffering has been all Layla has ever known. yet she wanted to help fulfill her dreams of caring for her people. But she gave it up to feed her family. No more dreams. No more. He pities school children less. Jesus has just turned 18. He spent the last 10 years in an orphanage outside of Veracruz. He will now leave the orphanage to seek employment. College is not an option for Jesus because he did not do well in school. He struggled just to be a big brother to his three siblings, to protect them, to guide them. How could he concentrate on his studies when he was responsible for his sister and two brothers? Their parents left them there. He had waited for their return. They never came. Now he will leave the orphanage and must look for work. How can he set up a home for his siblings on just $14 a day? How can he find a place to live, to feed and clothe himself, much less three others? No education. No money, nothing. Jesus is still an orphan. He's an adult orphan now. But adults, he pities not at all. Recently, I had a friend in Iraq call me compassionate because of the nonprofit I started to help the orphans there. The vision of this organization, Orphan Whispers, is just not to provide the lowest tier on Maslow's hierarchy of needs. That is the most basic needs for food, clothing, shelter, or safety. But to provide the highest of the tiers, that of self-actualization, by developing leaders. We want to take orphans in their teens and help them to grow into leaders who then mentor other orphans and contribute for rebuilding society in its post-conflict era, creating a ripple effect within the community. But when I heard these words, "You are most compassionate," I was taken aback. Yet the words I heard thereafter left me stunned. This person told me that he wanted to soak in my compassion. I was like the sun, and my rays of compassion sent warmth into the world. He wanted to soak in it so he could share it with his people who were suffering. I had never heard of compassion described so poetically before. This idea that we are like the rays of light, shining our compassion on others. They soak it in, absorbing compassion like osmosis, hoping to learn what we have learned to become. Of course, since I'm a seminary student, my mind went all theological on me. I started thinking of so many things in that moment. The sun as God, and the sun's rays represented by Jesus, according to my New Testament professor, Greg Riley, sent to the earth to shine the light of God. Jesus was the rays. Then I started thinking about that song that we Unitarian Universalists love to sing in worship. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine. The message of this song is that we are rays of God's light, like Jesus, like others who are considered prophets and enlightened beings. In fact, this is what we strive to become. This is why we have to let our light shine, sending our rays of compassion into the world. We strive to become like Jesus, like the Buddha, like Martin Luther King Jr., Gandhi, Mother Teresa. They all spread their light. They all exemplify compassion. But how do we get there? How do we become enlightened like Gandhi? This concept of light still bothered me. Could light really be compassion? How? As I thought about this some more, I was reminded of a chapter in the Quran called The Light, or Nur. This chapter is significant because it is the only chapter in which God is described. And God is described as light. God is the light of the heavens and earth. His light is like a niche in which is a lantern. The lantern in a glass. The glass like a shimmering star kindled from a blessed tree. An olive neither of the east nor of the west. Its oil almost aglow, though untouched by fire, light upon light. God guides to his light whomever he wills. Although this chapter has been interpreted and reinterpreted over and over, like the many interpretations of chapters in the Bible, a wonderful interpretation speaks of the divine light. That is, the light of God is so bright that it is like a star and will be felt throughout the land. It belongs neither to east nor west, but to both. It is everywhere in the heavens and the earth because God created these, and nothing can put it out, not even wind. This is why it is protected in glass. But then the verse changes. It says, light upon light. God guides to his light whomever he wills. This is in reference to the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, who was seen as the light of God. Even before divine revelation, he was gifted with purity and compassion and focused on helping humanity. Thus, when divine revelation came to him, it was light upon light. And you want to know what is most amazing? The prophet was an orphan. He was an orphan. Recently, I was watching a program in which a man on death row was set free. He had killed a woman in Louisiana after robbing a bank. He got a life sentence. A man mixed with African and Creole in the Deep South never seemed to have a chance to become free, much less one who was an orphan without a family. In that place, a little piece of hell on earth, he witnessed such horrors. But adults, he pities not at all. He abandons them. And sometimes they have to crawl on all fours in the scorching sand to reach the dressing station, streaming with blood. But while in his prison cell, he found solace in books. In fact, he said it was the only way in which he survived growing up in prison. He had entered into it as a young man. Now 75, he recounts the way in which he was set free. And it was books that unchained his heart and unchained the shackles of being a prisoner on death row. See, these books gave him hope in a world in which there was no hope. He decided to use his newfound knowledge about himself and the world to reach out and send hope into the world. While in prison, he started a newspaper and wrote about life in there. He was interviewed on television and in magazines. His life got so much press that eventually the world noticed and helped to free him from the chains that bound him. First, his heart and mind or emotional and spiritual freedom. And then he was literally set free, or physical freedom. He too sent his rays of compassion into the world, and now he's found a new family in his new life and with his new life. But perhaps he will have pity on those who love truly and take care of them and shade them like a tree over the sleeper on the public bench. In Buddhism, there is a concept of cause and effect. This concept can be explained using the example of throwing a pebble into the middle of a pond. What happens when we do this? Do you remember? When we throw the pebble, it lands into the water and creates concentric circles that get larger and larger and larger. The pebble is your cause, and the pond is the universe. When you throw the pebble into the pond, you are sending your cause out into the universe. All causes have effects. That is, there is a reaction to the action. The pebble hit the water and created circles. These circles represent a ripple effect. That is, one cause has the power to create waves of ripples of joy or of pain. And it takes only one person to create these ripples. That is the power of one. So what happens when we throw many pebbles into the pond? Well, we send many ripples out into the universe. Could you imagine what the effect might be if it was all ripples of joy and not pain? Perhaps even we will spend on them our last pennies of kindness inherited from Mother, so that their own happiness will protect us now and on other days. Just like in Christianity, Islam, and Judaism, one must transform oneself in Buddhism. It is through this transformation that we learn to send out ripples of joy into the world, our little rays of compassion. Buddhism speaks of the concept of a mirror. That is, each of us is a mirror. We are a reflection of the other. It is our duty to clean our mirror through meditation and prayer, so that we might reflect a polished or transformed being into the world, presumably one that will send joy and compassion into the universe, causing ripple effects of the same, creating a world of peace. I'm reminded of a poem by the Islamic Sufi poet Maulana Jalaluddin Rumi. Rumi is well known for his poems of love. In this particular poem, he speaks of God's compassion and how God gives us tools for transformation. Interestingly, he uses the same Buddhist concept of the mirror. O prisoner of time, I was a secret treasure of kindness and generosity, and I wish this treasure to be known. So I created a mirror, its shining face, the heart, its darkened back, the world. The back would please you if you've never seen the face. Has anyone ever produced a mirror out of mud and straw? Yet clean away the mud and straw, and a mirror might be revealed. Until the juice ferments a while in the cask, it isn't wine. If you wish your heart to be bright, you must do a little work. It seems that in Buddhism, like in Islam, when we do this, polish our mirror, we will find happiness. Our heart will become bright. We will understand, become more enlightened, and we just may find happiness in making others happy. And as our reading alluded to, so that their own happiness will protect us. It is when we love truly. But what is this true love? I believe it is compassion. Throughout the Quran, the following verse is repeated over and over. Inna Allah Ghafur un Rahim. Indeed, God is a compassionate forgiver. This verse is repeated to remind us that God is compassionate and merciful, so that we will also do the same. Did it not say in 1 Corinthians, faith, hope, and love, and the greatest of these is love? Rumi says, tread the path of selflessness into eternity. Remember God so much that you are forgotten. True love is compassion. Love is the greatest of all. How do we become like Martin Luther King Jr. and Mother Teresa? How do we become the Buddha and the Prophet Muhammad? Peace be upon them all. We polish our mirrors and transform ourselves, and then we shine our light of compassion into the world, just like they did, treading the path of selflessness, focusing on creating happiness in others, sending ripples of joy into the universe. When we do this, God will protect us now and on other days. So what will become of little Ahmed, Layla, and Jesus? Will they learn to truly love? Will they be able to let their light shine and spread compassion into the world? Will God then protect them too? If many pebbles of love and compassion are thrown into the pond, if we send our rays of compassion into the world, warming the hearts of orphans, the most marginalized in any society, much less a society in conflict or post-conflict, then maybe they have a chance. And maybe so do we. My father is Arabic. He's Iraqi. He's a very famous musician and singer. That's why I've been playing drums since I was 12 with him. So yes, I did in that respect, but I don't speak Arabic really. Shwaya. I say Shwaya. My French is better than my Arabic, and so when I was in Morocco this summer, I was able to get by in French. So so thank God. That is interesting. You should mention that. That is on the table. Right now, you may or may not know, musicians had to sort of flee Iraq when all the wars and conflict happened. The society has changed pretty dramatically. And so right now, we kind of lay low with that. But that is on the horizon, we hope. Because that's important to me. So it's about ourselves and seeing that people in our environment may be a reflection of us. And so maybe we need to change something. If we don't like something in our environment, then we need to change something about ourselves to change our life and the environment.
So,
first of all, what I would tell you is, doctor, heal thyself first. You are in charge of your own health. So with that, in terms of one thing that International Humanities Center was looking for was that we worked with other groups, that we weren't just the lone ranger going, ta-da, we're better than all the rest, that we actually work with other groups. And that's important. That's more and more important in the nonprofit world, that groups are working together, that they're not based on a system that is competing but working with.